This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we go behind the headlines and explore issues driving the press. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. In November 1995, the BBC aired a sensational interview with Diana, Princess of Wales, on its primetime programme Panorama. It was seen as the scoop of the century and a feather in the cap for journalist Martin Bashir, who was little known before then, but went on to conduct other high-profile interviews, including with Michael Jackson. However, this month, an independent inquiry found that Martin Bashir had used deception to secure the interview, and that the BBC management had failed to adequately investigate early claims of misconduct that actually surfaced back in 1996. What are the implications of this scandal for the BBC? Joining me to discuss this is Suzanne Franks, Professor of Journalism at City University of London. Good morning, Suzanne. Welcome to the show. The BBC's interview with the late Princess Diana took place 25 years ago. What led to the present scrutiny of the interview process so long after the initial events?
Well, that's a very good question, because actually a year after the famous Princess Diana interview, so in 1996, there was an investigation by a newspaper which unearthed a lot of this controversy and a lot of the dodgy dealings that had apparently gone on. And yet the story went away. It never really surfaced in a serious way. But then this last autumn, the story kind of came back again, and this rumours of these faked documents came back, and it suddenly absolutely, you know, hit home everywhere. There were several TV documentaries all about the interview, and that led to the Dyson report being convened late last year.
Talk to us about the Dyson investigation then. How was this commissioned? What was its aim? And what were the main findings?
So the BBC had, as I said, in 1996, they'd done a sort of an investigation into what had happened with the obtaining of the interview. And it was pretty much a whitewash, and it was all pushed under the carpet. What they did this time, which was much wiser, was they asked Lord Dyson, and he's a former, very, very distinguished Supreme Court judge, to do a proper, you know, judicial-led investigation into the circumstances. So this is a completely different kettle of fish, much, much more thorough. And he was asked to look at what were the circumstances which obtained so that Martin Bashir could get this interview with Princess Diana, and what had actually gone on inside the BBC when the forgeries were revealed. So he was investigating the original conduct by the journalist to get the Diana interview, and then he was investigating what the BBC did to try and investigate itself in 1996.
Mm-hmm. This wasn't a government commissioned report. It was the BBC who decided to undertake an independent investigation of the scandal, uproar into it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the BBC that asked Lord Dyson, as I say, a retired Supreme Court judge, to come in and carry out a proper inquiry, in contrast to the very hopeless inquiry that had gone on in 1996, which Lord Dyson was very, very critical about. So Lord Dyson found in his report that the original interview had been done under sort of less than ethical circumstances, that Martin Bashir had commissioned these forgeries of bank statements. He'd used those in order to persuade Princess Diana's brother, Earl Spencer, to agree to mediate with his sister and try and get this interview for the BBC, for Martin Bashir. So he found that Martin Bashir's conduct was unethical. And then he went on to look at how the BBC had investigated this conduct in 1996. And he came up with the conclusion that that was absolutely woeful. And that inquiry in 1996 was led by somebody called Lord Hall, who was at that point was head of news in the BBC, but he then later became the Director General.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was quite scathing of its assessment of the internal report that was carried out in 1996. Does the report give any sort of recommendations on what the BBC should do next? Or is it simply to determine whether the BBC was at fault in its conduct during the 1995 interview?
Well, no, it was pretty narrow, the inquiry. It was really just to determine what had actually gone on. And, you know, I mean, Lord Dyson is not really he's not a broadcaster or an expert in that field. So in a sense, it's up to the BBC then to pick up the ball and decide what to do next. And ultimately the government, I suppose. But it was quite a narrow remit. But he came out pretty clearly on all those issues.
Mm-hmm. What has been the reaction to the report, both from the public, but I guess also within the media fraternity? I mean, how have they taken the Dyson report on this?
So the tabloid press, and particularly those who have a sort of axe to grind against the BBC, which is mainly the sort of Murdoch press and the whole Daily Mail, Rothermere empire, have absolutely gone to town on this. And they've used it to really, really criticise the BBC, from top to bottom, as if it's basically has unethical practices and, you know, sloppy attitudes, and it can't investigate itself. It's got poor leadership and so on and on and on, even though this was 25 years ago. So in a sense, it's fueled that agenda. It's enabled a number of right-wing conservatives and even members of the government to this as a way to criticise the BBC and say that, you know, things need to change. So it's fueled that agenda. I mean, personally, if you think about the public, I mean, there's been some reaction, but I honestly don't think that the public are really that interested in something that happened 25 years ago. And if it wasn't about Princess Diana, I don't think the public would have paid that much attention at all. But the BBC has absolutely been down on its bended knees all week, and it's covered this in, day after day, story after story, sort of beating itself up about this, which obviously, you know, to some extent, you know, there is fault and it is an interesting story. But I mean, you know, given how much, what else is going on in the world at the moment with COVID and so many other things, it did seem a bit over the top. And interestingly, we had this terrible phone hacking scandal, which you're probably familiar with, where the tabloid newspapers were hacking celebrities and others' phones. And you didn't see anything like the same sort of, you know, groveling apology day after day for those incidents as you have for this from the BBC. One other thing I should say is that there is obviously a constituency out there that is, you know, firmly trying to sort of support public service broadcasting, and they are, you know, trying to support the BBC at this time and say that, you know, this is probably, you know, a rotten apple in the barrel. It was 25 years ago. You know, let's move on. We've got a lot of other things to decide in terms of broadcasting policy and supporting public service broadcasting. So that's kind of how it's played out across the spectrum, if you like.
I wanted to ask about that. Would a scandal like this have caused as much uproar if it had come from a corporate media outlet as opposed to a public broadcaster like the BBC? I mean, does the fact that the BBC received public funding mean that it's held to a higher standard of editorial integrity?
Oh, unquestionably, yes. Yes, I think the BBC, you know, does hold itself up and is held up as a sort of exemplar. And when it comes a cropper like it has done here, it absolutely, you know, it has to sort of apologise, investigate, and, you know, vow never to do the same again. Whereas with other media scandals, you don't quite get anything like this. For example, the phone hacking is a good comparator.
I mean, I know that you worked for the BBC in your long career, and you were part of the Panorama team for a bit. Did your experience on the show mirror in any way the circumstances that allowed Martin Bashir to carry on the deceptions that he did? I mean, to an outsider, I guess it does raise the question of whether this says something about the culture of journalism at the BBC, or do you think that this was just an isolated incident?
I was on Panorama for a couple of years, and Panorama is a program, as a, quite a young producer, it is a program of enormous egos, incredibly competitive. Everybody is sort of elbowing. I mean, I'm not commenting on it today because I don't work there now, but certainly when I was there, you know, there were some very sharp elbows. Everybody wanted to be first and to get the best scoops and so on. So it did, there definitely was a culture like that. And there were egos, the like of which, you know, I've never seen before or since, sort of battling it out. And there was huge jealousy when Martin Bashir got this story. He was a young reporter, I think he's in his early 30s then, and there were some very, very distinguished sort of grand old men, and they were all men, who were very, very angry that he got this story. So yes, it was a pretty febrile atmosphere, and I think I'm not saying, you know, this went on day in, day out, but there were people who would trample over their own grandmothers to get to a scoop.
Okay, so it was a really competitive environment.
Oh yes, I think Panorama was in a league of its own, and you can read, you know, there's a very good biography of Panorama, which gives you some of this sort of flavour of these of what the sort of office culture was like there.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking to Suzanne Franks, Professor of Journalism at City University of London. We'll continue the conversation after these messages. And make a note on your calendar. In conjunction with World Environment Day this week, we'll be speaking with companies that have dedicated themselves to upholding and promoting sustainable practices in the most unexpected ways. From tackling food wastage and plastics to progressive farming and ocean life conservation, join us as we shine the spotlight on Malaysia's very own sustainable superheroes, happening all this week at 10 a.m. on Enterprise. Brought to you by Volvo Cars. Redefining freedom to move in a personal, sustainable, and safe way. BFM 89.9. Hello, I'm Shazana, and this is Pressing Matters on the Morning Run. With me on the show today is Suzanne Franks, Professor of Journalism at City University of London. We're discussing the scrutiny of the BBC and its editorial practices following the revelations that a 1995 interview with Princess Diana had been secured by deception. Earlier in the program, we discussed the findings of the Dyson report. What do you think will be the impact of this scandal on the interview itself? I know that Prince William has called for the BBC never to air the interview again as a result of the deceptive way in which it was obtained. I mean, do you agree with that kind of call? Is the interview now invalid given that it was... it was procured in, you know, less than honest means?
I think, you know, Prince William, like any child of a divorced, bitter divorce, as this was obviously very, very emotionally cut up about this. And he made a number of allegations, which were probably a bit over the top. I personally don't think the interview should be banned. I mean, it's a very important historical document. It's one of the most important programmes that's ever been shown. And, you know, ultimately, there is a letter from Princess Diana saying very, very clearly that she wasn't influenced by anything. Martin Bashir didn't show her any of these documents, and she wasn't influenced by any of that. And frankly, a lot of these allegations that were swirling around, you know, about the fact that she was being... spied on by the Secret Service and she couldn't trust anybody, came from her own observations and slight paranoia. So I think, you know, to sort of cast all those aspersions over the interview as a document, as a broadcast document, is a bit excessive. And I personally wouldn't want it to be never shown again, because it you know, it's a very, very, very important and compelling piece of television.
Mm-hmm. What happens to, I guess, other bits of journalism that Martin Bashir has carried out then? I mean, when a journalist commits a deception as he did in one case, does this then cast a light on the entire body of work that he has done prior and since, just because it puts his methods suspect?
Now, that's a very good question. And I think not enough attention's being paid to this yet. Yeah, I mean, I think there's rumours about Bashir's conduct all over the place. I think the Michael Jackson interview he did is supposed to be, you know, less than wholly ethical, some of the means he used there. I know when he worked on an independent television at Granada in the UK, there were all sorts of rumours about the way he behaved there to colleagues, to interviewees. I mean, quite out of the ordinary sort of behaviour. And then also he was sacked from his both his jobs in the United States. So I think Martin Bashir's conduct in the wider television world needs to receive, a bit more airing. So it wasn't just, I'm not excusing the BBC by any means. And I think the way they tried to investigate this in 1996 was shocking. But on the other hand, Martin Bashir was a pretty, pretty devious and dodgy character, throughout his journalistic life.
Mm-hmm. How would you compare this scandal? Like, and as you've been mentioning, you mentioned the phone hacking scandal. It's not the first media scandal that's raised questions of integrity within British journalism. So how would you compare, I suppose, the magnitude of this and prior controversies? And what do you think will come out of this?
I think, if one compares that, what you could compare it, for example, with the scandal in 2003 about the coverage of the beginning of the Iraq War and the weapons of mass destruction, which I don't know if you're familiar with that. That caused total upheaval in the BBC. Director General and the chairman had to resign. So it's probably pretty much along those sorts of lines in terms of upheaval. I think the phone hacking scandal was a much, much more serious thing. I mean, that was systemic. That was going on day in, day out, across the tabloid world. And I do think, that in a sense, not enough attention has been paid on that as a sort of groundbreaking media scandal compared to this, which ultimately, is one very dodgy, unpleasant, unethical journalist, and then some rather hopeless managers who didn't investigate it properly. But I think the phone hacking is a much, much worse scandal, and we haven't really, largely because of these corporate interests, been able to get to the bottom of that and to see probably an adequate apology.
Now, the Dyson report is just one of several issues currently weighing on the BBC at the moment. Could you elaborate on other investigations or reviews that the BBC is undergoing?
So there are a number of investigations and reviews going on. Governance at the BBC is never a simple matter. The first and most immediate one, which is going to come back report this week, is the total scandal on how Martin Bashir could have been rehired by the BBC in 2016. You're probably aware of that, but he was rehired as the, would you believe it, the religion correspondent, and then promoted to be religion and ethics editor, which is kind of completely beggar's belief. So there's an investigation into that. And I mean, there the BBC really, really has got something to answer for. I mean, because they knew that he was a dodgy character. And the idea of rehiring someone in that kind of a position when you already knew that they were less than honest is an extraordinary tale. So that's the most immediate one. There are also an inquiry into sort of whether there needs to be a sort of different structure in terms of sort of journalistic editorial practices. I don't think that much is going to come of it. I think that personally, I think the BBC is very different from what it was 25 years ago, but they might come up with some sort of a different arrangement. And then much more significant is the fact that the next year is halfway through the current Royal Charter period of the BBC, and the government was anyway going to sort of make certain requirements and sort of review certain practices and procedures at this point. And I think this scandal will very much feed into what the government does, and it will make things more difficult for the BBC, and it's made their relationship with government ever more tense, and that things were not good on that front even to start with.
And I understand that the BBC is facing a lot of scrutiny by the Conservative government, especially those within the administration that feel the BBC has a bias against the Tory party. How does this play into considerations of the Royal Charter? And maybe you can give an overview of how public funding of the BBC works.
Basically, the BBC, as you may know, operates under a Royal Charter. It's a rather peculiar arrangement, but it's always worked very well in the past, that they're arm's length from government. I mean, the BBC is not a state broadcaster. I think that's very important in a lot of international audiences don't always understand that. It's not a state broadcaster, it's a public broadcaster, which is something very different. And it operates under a royal charter every 10 years or so. And this also determines what the licence fee is. And that obviously is crucial because that funds the BBC. So next year, we're halfway through the current royal charter period. And usually in the past, that's often just been a kind of just nodded through, and that's nothing particularly significant. But the Conservative government is really going to make the most of this opportunity halfway through the charter in order to, who knows what's going to come, but they may well call for various changes in practice, procedure, use that as an opportunity to ask are certain things of the BBC at this point. So we don't know, but there's all sorts of things afoot, supported by the right of the Tory party, and there's a sort of public service broadcasting review going on as well in government, and that's pretty ominous for the BBC because there are a lot of people on that who are not great supporters of the BBC. So So we'll have to see what happens.
So would this be considered like a threat against the media freedom in the UK?
I think that's probably putting it too harshly, but I think there are a lot of people out there that want to clip the wings of the BBC. I mean, there's a mood afoot saying, look, young people don't really watch television or listen to radio anymore. They use all these streaming services, and Netflix and so on, and YouTube. You know, why do we need such a big expenditure for public service broadcasting? We can get content from lots of other places. I mean, what they fail to understand is that, you know, A, you're paying a lot more for all the streaming services than you pay for the license fee, and B, all the endless extra services that the public gets from the BBC. I mean, the BBC is there to serve all audiences, you know, whether that's kind of educational services, the website, all sorts of things, you know, programs for disabled people, for minority communities, all of that. I mean, you won't get any of that from Netflix. So I think this, you know, it's a pretty unfortunate comparison that's going out there. But that is the kind of wider mood afoot. And this scandal has very much played into that agenda that, you know, the BBC needs to be curbed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. On that note, Suzanne, thanks very much for sharing your insights into this. I've been speaking to Suzanne Franks, Professor of Journalism at City University of London. This has been Pressing Matters on The Morning Run. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.